Friends Podcast.
Hi, I'm Diane Hunt. I am an impressionist realist painter connecting with nature through my brush. I work in oil paint and watercolor, and I live in the countryside of Maryland's Eastern Shore, not far from the Chesapeake Bay. You can find me online at dianehuntstudio.com. and on Facebook and Instagram at Diane Hunt Studio.
Hi, I'm Constance Brosnan of Steve Brosnan's Jewelry Designs. I live in Oklahoma on a prairie, and I make handmade jewelry in silver, copper, and brass. I'm an artist that paints. I paint pastels and in oils sometimes.
Hello, this is Clyde J. Kale. I'm the host of this podcast. I am a emerging representational artist. I do historic renderings, seascapes, landscapes, botanicals, birds, and whatnot. With a tight illustrative hand in watercolor, pen and ink, and acrylic paints. And I live in Oklahoma City. And here we are for Monday, January the 18th. My name is Clyde J. Kale, and you are listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 80. And once again, I'm here with my two best artist friends, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Clyde. Hello, Constance. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Constance.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Diane. Hello, everybody.
You know, I'm going to start saying, say hi to everybody, Constance. Let's see if she falls into the Gracie Allen, you know, comedy routine. We talked about that once before off air. All right. Thank you two for joining me. And this week's theme is art history or art biography or something like that. So I decided a type of artist that a lot of the fine art folks, the so-called sophisticated art community folks, they snub their nose up at them. And these are the comic book artists. They are true artists in their right, in their own. And so I found a couple of videos. One video is by talking about the story and the biography of Jack Kirby, who was very much his attribution is he created Marvel Comics, you know, and with his illustration and everything. But what I also found was a video I had not seen on before about the life of Roy Lichtenstein. And Roy Lichtenstein, this was in 1991, before he passed away. We had talked about Roy Lichtenstein before, but it was a video that was done after he had passed away, and they had interviews with his wife. And this was with Roy was still alive. And he pretty much from the artist's mouth explained his creative process and how he came about. But he kind of, he was in part of the pop art movement with Andy Warhol and the others, but he left those guys instead of doing industrial images and Campbell soup cans and whatnot. He was fascinated with comic books because he grew up on them, and taking the comic books images and enlarging them and expressing his artistic philosophy. And he was heavily, very much influenced by Jack Kirby. So that's why I made that connection right away. And Diane, got any commentary about these videos there?
Well, it was interesting listening to Roy about how he picked his subjects out of the comic books that he had. And he would go through and look at each frame and analyze it basically to see if it would be something that he could blow up into a huge, you know, fairly large painting. And if there was enough information of the kind that he wanted in that frame, or if he could use it in a way to tell what he wanted to say about it. So that was pretty interesting, seeing how he evaluated them, kind of. And, you know, it just, I don't know, the him using the dots and all that, like they do for the color in the comic books, and it was pretty cool. I just a lot of the things, though, I was surprised how much he copied the original art from the comic book. He didn't, some of them, he didn't change them all that much. He just made them, you know, enlarged them and, traced over them and stuff. And, you know, I guess he was trying to find, to learn, what he could about how the original artist had drawn them out and painted them, but, and how he could adapt it to paint instead of print. So that was pretty cool. Pretty interesting.
And I liked he said that the newer comic, the modern comics, the comics from the 80s and the 90s, he didn't care for. He purposely went to vintage bookstores looking for comic books from the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, which is the prime. That was when Jack Kirby was coming about, and very tremendous amount of artwork. I recognized it right away once I, watched the video of Jack Kirby. I recognized a lot of Jack Kirby's art on the wall, which kind of, maybe today, if somebody were to do that today, there would be copyright violations, whatever. But back then, it was curious how, like you said, on some of the images, he just blew it up. Would trace it. He wouldn't change anything. On others, he added, you know, different things.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that worked out as far as the copyright stuff, because it seemed like he did some of the things he didn't change at all. They were just done in a different medium, basically, instead of in the print, like the magazine, the magazines. He used paint. So I guess. I don't know. I mean, back then the copyright laws might have been slightly different than they are now, but
Disney has always been a prosecutor of copyright violations, and he's got, you know, Mickey Mouse and Donald.
Yeah.
You know,
I was wondering that too, like if they had some kind of agreement or something, or worked out some kind of a deal between the two.
They have.
Yeah, they may have.
Yep.
Or he may have bought the particular piece from them to do it from.
I don't think Disney would have sold any of theirs, because they're pretty, like he said, like Clyde just said, they're really strict about it.
They are ruthless.
They had to have worked something out.
I recall reading somewhere a few years ago, there was an artist who used to go around to families when the mothers would have them come in and paint Disney characters in their children's nurseries. And children, and Disney found out about it, and they actually sued that artist. I mean, my God! And the guy wasn't making a lot of money; he was only charging like a couple $100, you know. And he would draw a giant Mickey Mouse on the wall.
Yeah, copyright rights have really gotten
they're ruthless, you know. And even Marvel is very much. It's interesting. They will sometimes come down heavy-handed on you, and sometimes they won't. I've watched quite a few videos about, because there's a category. It's called fan art, you know, referred to as fan art. And like, I had a friend of mine. He was a Hulk friend. He was just a Hulk fanatic, and he asked me to do, when I decided that I was going to start this artistry. In fact, my first commission piece was from this guy. But so $25 was the Hulk. I did a watercolor of the Hulk for him. And I've never posted on a website or anything because I told him, I said, I don't know if this is technically it's copyright violation, but it's for you, private. And, you know, I also included a certificate that he doesn't have permission to make any copies or distribute it. He said, no, that's okay. I'm going to put it on in a frame, put it on the wall. So that's the extent of my fan art. I was thinking about doing some more, you know, and then I...
Yeah, it's a pretty sticky area to dabble in.
I watched several different videos about it on YouTube. And the conclusion is that if you're doing, you know, for like a personal thing, for a friend, but if you are intent on making several prints and selling prints, like go to a Comic Con convention, which a lot of these people did, and be selling prints, they'll come after you. But for personal use, Marvel is not that, because they appreciate, they want the fans, you know, to, you know, appreciate their work. But so, you know, I'm not worried about them knocking on my door.
Well, it's not like you mass produce it or anything either, so
yeah.
But
yeah,
still, I mean, even, you know, the wire wrap jewelry area that I dabbled in for about 12 years, get very upset when somebody copies their work or tries to produce the same thing they're producing. I mean, it's just, you know, if they take like a stealing patterns from each other, you know, and putting their name on the pattern, and that's all they change is the name of the pattern and put their name on it, you know, and it's obvious to see that, you know, it's the same pattern that the other person made, you know, so, yeah.
Yep. That's
all. You have to be really careful about copyrights when you're making jewelry also.
Yeah. An artist should always be aware of that. And another reason why I selected the subject of comic book artists, because comic book artists, unbeknownst to me, my mother, about a month ago, we were having this conversation. Comic book artists affected me and influenced me. I'm an artist today because of comic book art. She told me when I was about 3 years old, she was in a store one time, and I saw a comic book with all its bright colors, you know, and everything. At that time, I was fascinated with Disney, you know, comic books. You know, Donald Duck, because, you know, I'd seen them on TV. I was jumping up and down and raving. Even though I couldn't read, she had to buy one. Okay, so she bought one for me. And so she bought several, you know, and I she would read them. I'd try to force her to read them to me. She said I would spend hours just flipping the pages and looking and everything. And then when I got a little bit older, I guess when I was like 5 or 6, he doesn't know who gave me the idea, but I took a blank piece of paper over the top and I started tracing them. And then I would color the tracing in. And I was at my grandmother's house when I did that. And it was at that point, my grandmother, this story my mother's told me, because I don't remember none of this. Yeah. My grandmother told her, you know, that boy may have some talent. Because he came up on his own idea of how to trace. I didn't tell him how to do that. And he's been doing it ever since then. And now he's been trying to draw them freehand without tracing. So comic books had a definite influence on me. Later on, I don't know why I didn't pursue a career or studies as an illustrator. Because maybe it was due to the negativity, because there was a definite negative connotation. I mean, in the 60s and 70s, when I was, you know, going through high school and grade school and high school, art classes, we didn't even discuss comic book illustrators. You know, they talked about.
Well, I think by that point, the comics in general had kind of fallen out of favor. I think they were more popular in the 40s and 50s and into the 60s. But by the time, you know, you were getting into high school and stuff, they probably weren't that popular by then, like, yeah, they were back years ago.
Well, what's interesting is they are now comic book artists are considered artists in their own right, and they're celebrities because, you know, you've got all the movies that are based on the characters that were created, you know, the mainstay characters, you know, Superman, Batman, the Fantastic Four, and the Avengers. These are all from the 60s and 70s, created by Jack Kirby. You know, Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, you know, at Marvel, and, you know, created all those. And now, you know, if you create a character, a new character, and it gets made into a movie, it's like, you know, that's superstardom. And so it's more of a comic book artists are taken seriously now. Yeah, but in fact, that's why there's so many young artists that are trying, you know, to it's like their dream job is to get hired by Marvel, you know, and they're, you know, they're duplicating and modifying the, you know, the Fantastic Four and, you know, and the Hulk and the Avengers and, you know, all the various characters. And what's interesting is, you would think, because I grew up reading all those comic books, okay? They were a mainstay as a boy, you know, growing up. You would think I would like the movies, but I'll be honest with you. I think the movies suck.
Well, it's just like a book. Like, you know, when you're reading a book, your mind fills in what it, you know, like it, from the descriptions or whatever, your mind builds up the characters and things. And then you see it in a movie form, it doesn't match what you were envisioning, so it's not always as good. You know, it's,
you know, my grandson is, you know, an Avenger nut and Spider-Man, you know, he likes the movies, and, you know, he's got all the figurines, you know, that I've bought him, so he's, you know, but I myself, you know, I've never cared for the movies. My favorite group of characters was, I love the Fantastic Four. Yeah, and they also, when they made them into cartoon form, that was the best movie. That's what I enjoyed in that. Besides reading.
Well, that's the other thing, too, like trying to take a story or an idea from, you know, cartoons or characters like that that are made up and trying to make something physical out of them, you know, in a movie form, where you have to actually build things and, you know, try to put together the scenes and things that are more out of somebody's imagination, and, you know, trying to make it a real thing doesn't always work. You know,
I love the Jack interview, the interview with Stan Lee would just write the very basic outline of a story, and it uses only one or two pages, and would hand it to Jack. Later, Jack would come back with 20 illustrations based on that two or three page story that he said would just blow his mind out. And he said he never, ever, ever had to worry about Jack not coming, not bringing to work, you know, and like his own son was interviewed there. And I like what he said. He said, actually, he said, we had a pretty poor childhood relationship because Dad was working all the time. I think he had his daughter too, you know, talk. He said that, They lived in, he called it the cave. His studio was down in the basement. No windows and just one fluorescent light. And that's, and he said he wasn't fancy. Like today, you know, you got artists, you know, comic book artists that have scanners, and they have the digital pads and, you know, different kinds of pens or whatever. Jack just had a pencil and regular paper.
Right. That's what they said. He had the same drafting table or that he had. He said that was always the last thing on the moving van and the first thing off. But, and his chair, he had just an old dining room chair that he sat in, and he just used regular pencils and regular paper. He didn't use anything fancy at all.
Incredible. And if there wasn't so much snobbery his illustrations are quality art, could be in a museum, it was worthy of a museum, and it wasn't until, what was interesting was it wasn't until Roy Lichtenstein actually started doing that now galleries and museums are looking at, in fact, a Jack Kirby illustration is worth a hell of a lot of money nowadays. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now that he's passed away, but when he was alive, it wasn't. I mean, he barely eked out a living. He had to work all the time.
There for a while they were not being selling anything because I don't know how it got started, but they said it was communism, so they quit printing it, and he had a really hard time getting back on his feet after that. That incident, I don't know.
Yeah, there was something about because he was Jewish background, and there was some kind of a slander that was passed around, and he was actually put on a blacklist for a little while.
That's awful.
He's black in the '50s, and took a lot to. If it wasn't for the fact that he had such a tremendous amount of talent, and Marvel Comics just about went out of business during that period, and he brought him back to life. I mean, his illustrations, reinvigorated him. But yeah, that was a, and it was somebody, a competitor. He was jealous, so that's how you. That's how you hurt people in those days, and it's still going.
He was so prolific that there was nobody else that could produce the amount of work that he was producing and come up with new characters and new stories and mm-hmm. stuff constantly. I mean, I guess it's part of being down in his basement and, and just kind of keeping his head into the creative space. He just was so prolific.
And not be afraid of what he was creating. I think a lot of times nowadays, I know especially I am, I'm always worried about how something's going to be received if I paint it a certain way or not a certain way, or you just worry too much about what other people are going to think. And I think he just didn't have a problem with that. He just created and trusted his process to work, and it did.
It made his illustration so wonderful, so dynamic and action oriented. It's like one of the artists who was interviewed was telling that it's from an, as far as anatomy goes, it's not correct. But the way he drew it, he said, you look at it, you got a hand reaching out, and he puts a little black line here or there. And it looks like the muscle, but in reality, if I guess if Steve Houston, who was, very prominent illustrator, I guess if he looked at that, he probably wouldn't. That's not correct, actually.
Well, his drawings were more, Jack's were more about the action and kind of movement of the figure and not so much the proportion, the correct proportions and all that. He was more about trying to have an action going, like, because they were saying that he'd just like draw the hand that was like coming out of the screen, at you, and then fill in the behind it. And it wasn't necessarily all there or all correct, but he emphasized the hand, so then that's what he wanted it to do. Uh-huh. So it was a different kind of drawing, for sure.
Like one of the artists talking about that, he says he'll start out with one panel, it'll be just a foot. The next panel will be a hand. And he said an hour later, you've got this whole complete action. Oh, I wish I could draw like that. I really, from my pulp radio art illustrations, let me tell you, I'm.
Well, Clyde, if we all sat down and drew as much as he drew, then eventually it does work itself
practice
out to where you have a style and a style and a
dedication. Yeah.
You just have to draw all the freaking time. And I mean, he sat down and it was like a cubicle in the basement, and that's all he did all day long.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you do that, then eventually, you know, your personality and style come out and then just become more, you know.
I guess that's why Roy Lichtenstein was so enamored with his work, because he would pick out these certain, like Diane said, certain frames of images. He'd have this ideal in his head, or he would just thumb through the comic books, and then he would see a frame and he would cut it out and then put it in a folder and stick it away. And that's for a future project. And then he would go and like he told himself, he would, when he came up with an idea in his mind of a large canvas, you know, then he would go through his files and find these little reference points, you know, and everything. It just impressed me, you know, the comic book artists, you know, they're finally getting the respect they do them. So when it's talking about the biography and the art history, they're part of art history too. Yeah, they've have either of you two been influenced by comic book artists?
Can't say that I have been. I mean, I used to like to read a certain kind, but then, you know, that was a long, long time ago. But I can't say that my art was ever influenced by it, really.
Yeah, not me either. Not that I know of. Not that I haven't made that connection. I never really looked at comics all that much, so I probably don't have that much of a connection with it. But
comics, pretty much, it's a boy thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. It's more of a guy thing. Comic books are. I mean, they even have whole stores that are just devoted to comic books now. So,
and now what's so interesting was all of the guys who were boys who were fanatics reading them are now fanatic collectors. I mean, I know some guy that just will spend thousands of dollars for a 1940s Jack Kirby, you know, comic book or whatever. They will just, you know.
They're collectors things now. I mean,
you know, and that's why those stores thrive, because, you know, especially some of the vintage comic book stores, you know, and they're online. It's a big business now. You know, it's a big deal. Comic book artists, their time has come. They are just a part of art history as Picasso, as Renoir or Rembrandt or Roy Lichtenstein. Roy Lichtenstein kind of, I think he kind of helped give a certain stature, you know, because right now his, you know, what he has paintings that go for a couple of $1 million or $100 million. What is that one that he's most famous of, where it's the woman with the tear in her eye and the guy's, you know, saying, I never.
Yeah, they're millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars for that. Like,
well, that's a different kind of art. I mean, the comic books were basically, you know, they printed a new one every week or something like that. So they were more of a disposable type of art, I guess, when they were being made, you know, back in the 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a different thing kind of than actual paintings that like Roy's doing or did. So it was taking something that was more of a throwaway type art and making it more permanent, I guess. It's interesting.
I think that's about it. We've hammered this enough. I hope our listeners enjoy our discussion. And please, I forgot to mention the website, but please check out the Roy Lichtenstein video and a Jack Kirby video. You will find them at www.talkartpodcast.com. That's talkartpodcast.com. And hope you enjoy them. You're see what we're talking about. You've been listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 80, for January the 18th, 2021. And I've been here. My name is Clyde J. Kale, and I've been here with Diane and Constance, my two best artist friends. I'm going to say bye-bye to Diane and Constance. Let Diane say goodbye to everybody.
Bye, Clyde. Bye, Constance. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Diane. Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for listening, folks. And please, as always, if you enjoy these podcasts, give us some feedback. and give some thumbs up and star rating. However, you wherever you find our podcast, this is on multiple platforms. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye, folks.
The Artist Friends Podcast is produced and edited by Clyde J. Kale. Participating artists, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson, and Clyde J. Kale. You can find more information about Diane Hunt at www.dianehuntstudio.com. Constance Bronson at www.etsy.com/shop/CBROSNANS. Clyde J. Kale at www.cjkaleartworks.com. If you would like to participate or appear as a guest on the Artist Friends Podcast, please email cjkale@mystery-otr.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a thumbs up or a star rating. And most of all, send us your comments. This podcast is issued under the Creative Commons license.